Hi guys, yes, this is the jet ski edition. I have not done a jet ski edition until now. I have taken the jet ski to places and done weekly updates, but this is the first time I've done it on the jet ski. It is autumn here, or fall, depending on what part of the world you're from. As you can see, it's terrible. It's pretty bad. it's not too bad at all. So it's pretty nice here all year round. So I'm on the Gold Coast, and this is sort of Australia's holiday destination. It's in Queensland, one of our northern states. Has all the good weather, all the good sunshine. It's still the sixth largest city in the country, actually, and as the jet ski kind of rotates around a little bit, I'm just anchored here, you'll see the city over there and a bunch of high-rises. Got about 600,000 people. Because it is a big touristy spot, we get stuff like that, and then you'll hear jet skis and jet boats and things like that. So we'll see how this goes. This may not be a regular thing because of all the ambient noise. Now, be that as it may, getting down to business. A few things this week. And the first one was I did my Security Sense column, and I wrote a bit about normal accidents. And what I was sort of getting to here is that there's sort of this expectation that we should be able to get down to zero with security flaws, or the analogy that I use, I talk about one particular state in Australia that has a rather draconian approach to speed limits, where they pin you if you go 3k an hour over the limit. Now, what I mean by this is that either 3k or 2 miles, depending on where you are in the world, the width of your speedo needle, they'll give you a ticket because they go, hey, every k over is a killer. We're going to eliminate deaths on the road by getting down to absolute zero. So there's going to be no more deaths. That's the target. Which, of course, is impossible. Even when cars are self-driving, the tree's going to fall on one or the software's going to go wrong, you're going to have problems because cars, like computer systems, are complex machines. And this premise of normal accidents is that in complex systems, like vehicles and software, there's always going to be some degree of stuff that goes wrong just by the nature of how complex it is. Now, none of this is to say you throw your hands up and give up. And obviously that is the last thing that I do. I spend a lot of time talking about how to make stuff better. But we've also got to be conscious that this is never like an absolute position. And every time you see these absolute positions represented, things like bulletproof security, which, by the way, what was it, Regpac, who got breached last year, they didn't get breached, they kind of actually published a few hundred thousand credit card transactions to the web. Lost data last year. Still saying bulletproof. Now, no one should be saying bulletproof because it implies that a bullet can't go through. And look, I get the fact that even a bulletproof vest, you could have a bullet go through, etc., etc. The point is that this objective of getting to zero is not the right thing to be focusing on, because you're going to set yourself goals that are unachievable. We've got to focus on what's actually practical. So what can we influence? What can we get down as low as possible, as close to zero as possible, whilst also recognizing that stuff is going to go wrong and we must have plans for that? This is why we do things like password hashing, because we know that sooner or later someone may well get our passwords, and we put in mitigating factors. So accidents are always going to be normal. Data breaches are always going to be normal. Stuff going wrong with your software is going to be normal. Get ready to deal with it if it happens. Okay, so that was that bit. Now, the next one, net prospects. A few days ago, I didn't know what net prospects was. Certainly a week ago, I didn't know what net prospects was. And unless you've read my blog post on it, you probably didn't know what net prospects was either. Net prospects is a service run by Dun & Bradstreet. And Dun & Bradstreet are a very big publicly listed company in the US that do a lot of different things around financial sectors, around data aggregation. It seems to be one of those companies that almost falls into that consulting category, you know, consulting category sort of company, where they do lots of stuff. And, you know, I get that. That's fine. But one of the things they did is sold lists of data. Now, were it not for the fact that it was a large publicly listed company, you may look at this list and say, well, this is a spam list. And, you know, it kind of is a spam list, but they don't position it as a spam list, of course, because they want to sell it as a legitimate service. And they go, look, it's marketing, it's optimizing scales of economies of web 2.0, I don't know, like the usual sort of marketing speak. Anyway, they build this big list up and they sell it to companies. And by all accounts, they sell it for quite a lot of money as well. I've heard figures from people that range up into six-figure money. I have heard a number larger than that as well. And it seems to all depend on how much data of what type you want. Anyway, one of the people that I've sold this data to has lost it. And they lost about 33 million records. Now, they say it was one of the people that I've sold it to because they said they haven't identified any intrusions in their system. I have no reason not to believe them. That's probably what they have discovered. And it is quite possible that someone that they sold the data to then lost it. In a way, though, the mechanics of how it happened don't really matter that much, because the bigger debate that this has brought about is the fact that they have that data and they're monetizing it. Now, let's just be clear about what is in the data. So we have got our first names, last names, email addresses. Now, there's that, or one more thing as well, of a personal nature, job title. So all of these things are about the individual. And then what they do is they go, okay, now there's going to be a bunch of information about the company that they work for. What's the name of the company? Where are they based? What's their revenue? How many employees do they have? All sorts of stuff, which is basically public information. Now, you can imagine how all of this would be rather useful, because what it means is that you can take this data and very specifically target individuals in certain capacities in certain companies. So if you were selling a particular product where you really wanted to get in touch with, say, the sysadmins of Fortune 500 companies, there's their data. So you can imagine how that would be valuable for targeting purposes. I guess the uncomfortable bit comes when people start to say, I might not want my data used this way. Or companies might start to say, I don't want our people being exposed in this way. And the curious thing here is Dun & Bradstreet have sort of said, well, this is not personally identifiable information. And I'm going, hang on a second. You got someone's name, first name, last name, their email address, their job title, and the company they work for. You can personally identify people very, very accurately with this information. Now, here's the debate, because what they then say is they say, well, it's not PII because it's the same data that's on your business card. It's company data, it's corporate data. Now, frankly, I don't really like the idea of redefining the English language in this way. Because personally identifiable data, by any reasonable definition, is data that can be used to personally identify people. The caveats here seem to be around the fact that PII is not PII in some jurisdictions, such as some areas in the US where Dun & Bradstreet are based, if it is effectively business card data. And what I've continually seen, here's a comment from them. I've got my iPhone up here on the jet ski. They say, based on our analysis, it is our determination that there has been no exposure of sensitive personal information. I agree with that. I wouldn't class any of that as sensitive. It's not birth dates, genders, sexual orientations, religion, that sort of stuff. And no infiltration of our system. You know, again, that's reasonable. But here's the sticky bit. They say the information in question is data typically found on a business card. Now, you can't argue with that. I guess that the bit that's sort of different here is that you normally don't grab 33 million business cards in one go and query them in a database. But that's what we have here. We have all of these business cards. The other sticky bit is most people choose who they give their business card to. Jet skis. They don't give it to jet skis. There are jet skis. And the point here is that when you provide something like your business card to an organization, you are consciously opting into sharing your information with them. When an organization like Dun & Bradstreet aggregate all of this data absolutely en masse, this is without the opt-in of the individuals who own the data. And that's very important. The trick here, though, is that it is more important in some places than others. So it is more important in, say, Europe than it is in the US, because Europe is very sensitive about personal information. Even within Europe, it's more important in a country like Germany than many other places, because Germany in particular has a lot of privacy rules for data. So inevitably, a lot of people got upset about this. I've had lots of individuals, lots of companies, lots of very, very, very big companies in touch with me the last few days wanting more information about this and doing things like domain searches on Have I Been Pwned, all the data's on Have I Been Pwned, because they want to try and figure out what their exposure is. They are worried about risk. So have a think about it. When you have all of this information about an organisation, so you know the names, the email addresses and the job titles of people, it starts to allow you to target attacks against them in a very, very comprehensive, well-rounded sort of way. So for example, you know who the VPs of a company are. Now some of this information is available publicly. You know, certainly C-suite executives, easily available publicly. Once you start going down the rungs, a lot harder to get that data. You know the positions they're in, you know the people that work in accounting, you know the names of people, so you can start to target things like spear phishing emails very, very effectively. I made a point in the blog post about the military. There is a lot of Department of Defense personnel in the database, over 100,000. They were the biggest organization represented. When you start to know DoD people, and you know which of them are ammunition specialists and which one of them are intelligence analysts, that's kind of valuable data, and I'm sure you can think of the sort of individuals and let's say nation states that would be very interested in that sort of data. So that's where a lot of the worry is. It's this massive collection of information. And even though they sell this through the mainstream and it's obviously something they believe is legal, probably is legal, it's been all over the press the last few days. I've had dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of Google alerts about this story appearing because it is such a big thing when you lose that much data. So I think something like that is not particularly healthy, and in fact the blog title of the post where I wrote about this was titled "We've Lost Control of Our Personal Data." And the reason I use that title is that's exactly what Tim Berners-Lee said only a few days ago. So for those of you who don't know who Tim Berners-Lee is, he's credited with inventing the World Wide Web as it stands about 28 years ago. He came up with the first spec on that. He was in the news on the weekend because it is the birthday, and he had three different things that he felt needed to be fixed on the web, and that was one of them. And it's a very important point because he's very right, where we no longer have control over this data. And this is why in a case like NetProspects, people are so surprised that the data was out there. They're going, well, where did these guys get it from? So that's a big problem, and I think this is the sort of thing that really needs some better legislation around it. The idea of companies aggregating and selling your data without your permission in this way, and by your, I mean both individuals and companies, and no, it doesn't count that you agreed to the terms and conditions because no one bloody reads them anyway. So that was a big problem. And I'm just sort of scrolling through my iPhone, see what else on my list here. Other data breaches. I loaded in the BTCE, Bitcoin Exchange data breach. I think that was on the weekend. Nothing overly noteworthy about that. I also loaded in the Wishbone data breach. Now, you're probably like me in that you are not a teenage girl, and you may not know what Wishbone is. Wishbone is a little app where you can compare things. There's sort of this interface where you have two different things and you somehow compare them together and do something with that in the app. I don't even know exactly what the app's meant to do, to be honest, other than this comparison thing. And they had a large number of millions of records in there. So the data that I got had about 9 million plus records in it, 2.3 million unique email addresses. And on each one of those accounts, we had things like ages and gender, which is why I know that it's mostly teenage girls. It was about a ratio of more than 5 to 1 females to males. Average age was around about the 18 sort of era. So obviously a spread of both children and adults, but generally very young. So they had all this data floating around. The motherboard did a piece on this. I worked with Lorenzo again. They seemed to have a little bit of trouble initially getting in touch with Wishbone, who then picked it up and done their analysis and said, yes, it's legit. I knew it was legit because they've got an API endpoint that makes enumeration dead easy. Plug in an email address, here's a bunch of data about the account. So bad news there to be able to enumerate that way. After the story went out, someone also contacted me and said, here is something that I reported to them some time ago, which was they showed a fiddler trace where there's an ID in a GET request, and of course the ID is a number, and then beneath that is a whole bunch of data, including the email address of the person. And guess what happens if you add one to the number? So this is sort of another one of these cases of, do you know how to count? Yeah, you're a hacker. Good job. So not so great for them. That was a bit of a problem. But, you know, otherwise it's a business as usual data breach. They've notified people. They've basically just done the usual. We take security seriously. Fix your things. Yada, yada, yada. Moved on. So that was that for data breaches. One thing, actually, I just listened to this morning. I did a podcast for the Reply All podcast just recently. I think I only did it about last week. And, look, I do a lot of podcasts and interviews and things, and generally I don't think too much about them. I just go, all right, when are we going to turn up and do this? And we do it, and that's it. Now, these guys actually seem to be very, very well known, and I listened to the podcast this morning. It was really great, really, really nicely produced podcast. Reminds me a little bit of, forget the one now, some of the really nicely produced US-based podcasts, Radio Labs, that's the one. Reminds a little bit of Radio Labs. Nicely produced, very, very well put together. It was a story, and it was an interesting story because it was basically about, jeez, this guy's a bit close. Anywho, I hope he doesn't knock my iPhone into the water, that'd be fun. It's an iPhone 7. It'll float. It'll be waterproof. So, the story, getting back to Reply All. So, what Reply All was doing a story on is one of their guys had his Uber account compromised. And it was kind of interesting because they were going through trying to investigate how did the Uber account get compromised. We obviously talk about have I been pwned, and they look for the guy on there and we talk about that. Just a really nicely produced podcast. I'm going to listen to a bunch more of them because I thought they did a good job. So I'll link to that in the notes on the blog post I'll put out with this. Last thing on this is Checkmarks is still up there sponsoring my blog today. So Checkmarks have been there for a few weeks now. I do a bit of work with these guys outside of what I do with the sponsoring, or what they do with the sponsoring anyway. They do some really neat stuff, and they are well worth a look at as well. So look, that's it. I know the wind's coming up a little bit, so I hope it is okay audio-wise. I went for a little bit of a swim round here, a little bit of a snorkel, just before I started recording this. So I might tack the GoPro footage I got of that onto the end of this, just so that if you're on the other side of the world and you're feeling cold, a little bit miserable, you'll have something nice to look at. Thanks for listening. I will go back to the office next week and I'll be back into my normal position. Thanks, guys. See you later.